Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. One of the most rewarding parts of being a game master is creating your own world. A very important big picture aspect of fantasy worlds is the gods. Today, I continue my discussion of the gods of my world. So join me on the journey. Together, we can become game masters truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener and fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 31 of Game Master's Journey. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. I've got a great show for you today. I'm going to do some more world building and continue discussing the gods of my world. So last episode, I talked about how I wanted a tighter pantheon than we see in the realms, and that I don't want any kind of over god in my world. I also discussed how my gods are slackers and dicks. Another thing that I really want in my world is I want the world to actually be polytheistic, unlike most slash all D&D settings that I've had experience with. If you think about it, like Forgotten Realms, you would think, oh, this is a polytheistic world because there's all these gods, right? But if you look at how the player characters at least interact with the gods, it's really more monotheistic because each character just worships one god, like your patron deity, right? So if you're a cleric, you're a cleric of Tempest, or you're a cleric of Corallon, or you're a cleric of Mystra, right? You're not a cleric of like five different deities or all the deities, right? So it's not really polytheistic in that sense. So in my world, I want to actually have it be polytheistic. And I recently got the Kobold Publishing book on world building, which, I'm about 50-50 on that book. There were two or three really cool articles in it. One of the articles that I did like in it was about this, about how D&D worlds usually aren't actually polytheistic and some ideas of how to actually make them polytheistic. And I'm running with some of those ideas. So in my world, people don't actually worship a single god. Like, that's unheard of. Nobody does that. Instead, they worship all the gods that have portfolios that have any kind of influence on their lives. So I remember when I played Pathfinder, when I read about the elves in the Pathfinder setting, the elves were actually supposed to be polytheistic. You know, it said in the books on the elves or whatever, I don't remember exactly where I read it, but I read that most of the elves worship the entire elven pantheon, and they might have a few of the gods that they really kind of favor, but the elves don't really just worship one deity like I guess the humans do in Pathfinder. So I like playing elven characters, so I would play an elf and be like, oh, well, my character actually worships like these five gods. And everybody thought that was weird, even though the book said that's how it was. Everybody was like, well, you can't worship five gods, you have to pick one. So it's not going to be like that in my world. It's actually going to be polytheistic. Now, because of this, obviously, divine casters are going to have to work differently, right? Because the whole idea behind like the cleric and the paladin is that they have one specific deity that they're getting their powers and their spells from. And if they piss that deity off, then no more spells, no more powers, right? So obviously that's not going to work in a truly polytheistic world. So what I'm going to do is all of the religions in my world are going to be more like mystery cults in history. And this was something that was suggested in the Kobold Guide to World Building that I talked about. So the outsiders of a mystery cult, so people that aren't part of that cult, really know little to nothing about how that cult works, what their rites and ceremonies are, what their beliefs are, that kind of stuff. Once one is initiated into the cult, then you start to learn things about it. So I'm going to use the renown system from the DMG with this to reflect your quote-unquote rank within a given mystery cult. So let's say I have Sehenine Moonbow, okay, is my goddess of magic, let's say. And that's another thing. I'm not sure whether to rename the elven gods that I'm using, but I don't think I will. I'm using some dwarven gods too, because they're already present across settings already. You know, like Corallon is a god in numerous D&D settings already. So there's already this idea of like the elven and dwarven, especially pantheons, are kind of transcend any one world, and they came from elsewhere. And I'm actually using that in my world. Like, the elves in my world did not originate on that world. They came from somewhere else. So anyway, let's say I have Sennin Mumbo, and you want to join her cult and become a worshiper of her, because everybody venerates all the gods, right? So let's say I'm a peasant. I'm a farmer. Okay, I grow like barley and shit, right? And I'm just living hand to mouth. I'm living under the domain of a lord, and I grow barley and vegetables and stuff, and I trade those for the other things I need, and the lord protects me and everything, right? So obviously, the goddess of agriculture is going to be very important to me. I'm going to be giving her offerings all the time because I want my crops to be healthy and have a good harvest and stuff like that. However, I'm also going to be very respectful towards the goddess of fertility if she's not the same goddess because, well, I probably have livestock, you know, and I want my livestock to be fertile. I want my chickens to hatch lots of eggs and all that stuff, right? So that's going to be important to me. I probably have a wife and I probably have kids. So the goddess of the home and hearth and marriage and all that stuff is going to be important to me. Weather, right? Weather is really important if you're a farmer. So any kind of gods of the sky and storms and weather and things like that are going to be really important to me. I'm really going to try to keep those gods happy and give them offerings so I don't have lightning storms coming and setting my fields on fire, or I don't have blizzards coming and killing all my livestock and stuff like that. So you get the idea, right? If I'm a fisherman, then the god of the streams and fishes is going to be important to me. So each individual person is going to venerate every single god that has any kind of influence on anything that's important to them in their life. And, you know, that's how it was in history. And so, you know, you're going to give offerings to those gods and things like that. Well, that's just being they have terms for this. I can't remember the terms. But, like, you're just, like, you maybe worship that god. I don't know if worship's really the right word. You respect that god. You give that god offerings. But you're not necessarily like a full-blown worshiper, like member of their mystery cult, right? So if you want to go to the next step, go to the next level and actually join that god's mystery cult, then you have to apply. You have to say, hey, I want to join your group. And then they may have some kind of tests or ways that you need to prove that you're worthy of them and of that deity. And then there will be an initiation ceremony. And at that point, once you survive that, you're an initiate of that mystery cult. And at that point, you have a rank, and I will use the renown system to track your rank within that cult. So rank within the cult is earned by, you know, serving faithfully, doing the things that your superiors in the cult asking you to do, giving sacrifices, giving donations, participating in the rites and the ceremonies, and just doing great deeds for that mystery cult, for that religion, for that god, whatever it may be. And some renown will be able to be gained during downtime by doing just downtime activities. Like maybe they have a shrine and you keep the shrine clean or you repaint it or something, right? So that's something you could do in downtime and maybe get a little renown with that cult. Some renown could be gained by just simply giving donations. You just give them some gold and you get some renown. And some will be gained by basically doing quests. So someone in the mystery cult might say, hey, we need this thing done. Whoever goes and does it for us will receive favor in our eyes. Now, the PCs will be able to be members of multiple mystery cults if they want. And if they are members of multiple cults, they will have a separate renown score and rank with each one. Now, if you're talking about a divine caster, like say a cleric, their access to spells will be tied to their renown in a mystery cult. Okay. So not only as you level your character, not only will you need the requisite level to gain higher level spells. So say you need to get to fifth level as a cleric to cast third level spells, right? Not only is there that, but you're also going to have a high enough rank in a mystery cult. And, you know, I haven't worked out all the details of this, but I might say, well, to get third level spells, you need to be rank 3, whatever that would be called. And, you know, every cult's going to have different names for their ranks, but you need to be rank 3 renown with a cult to get access to third level spells. So ideally, all characters will be members of at least one mystery cult, and some will be members of multiple cults. Obviously, anyone like a cleric or a paladin is just automatically going to have to be a member of at least one. Other characters, you know, it's kind of an option. They could choose not to. But I'm hoping that all the PCs will, just because it pulls more things into the stories, especially if they're members of different cults. Now, if a divine caster is a member of multiple cults, then her highest rank in a cult is used for spellcasting purposes. So maybe, you know, she's a member of 3 cults for 3 different deities, and one of them she's rank 1, one of them she's rank 3, and one of them she's rank 4. Well, when considering, you know, what level of spellcasting she has access to, you go on the highest one, which is rank 4. So because of this, a PC's spells, if you're a divine caster, don't come from just one specific god, but they can come from any of the gods of any of the cults she serves. And this is going to be something that's going to be behind the scenes for the players. The PCs are going to have no knowledge of what deity their spells are coming from, but it's something that I can play with as a DM. Perhaps I could even give a PC access to more powerful spells than what she could normally have based on her level, that are actually coming from an opposing god that opposes a god she serves. And then if she uses those spells, so let's say she's a 5th level character, would normally have 3rd level spells, and I say, oh, you know, you have actually a 4th level spell slot that's available to you, and you can use that to cast 4th level spell if you want. And of course, she doesn't know where that came from. She just knows it's there. Well, she actually uses it. Well, that spell slot is actually coming from a deity that opposes one of her deities. And now she might be in trouble because she's basically serving another deity at that point. So this would allow her to exceed her level and power for a time. But there could, of course, be negative consequences from the cult she serves that is in opposition to that, and from its deity might not be happy. As a PC gains access to the deeper mysteries of a cult, as they get more and more renown and rank within a cult, in addition to just unlocking higher levels of spells, if you're a divine caster, everybody will get access to things like feats and special abilities that will open up to them. And I haven't decided if they'll just get those automatically or if they'll be able to purchase them in some way. It'll probably be a combination of the two. So, you know, even someone who's a completely like non-spellcasting character, like a battle master fighter, if he gets high enough in a god's mystery cult, he could actually get some divine inspired like special abilities or spell-like abilities or feats that are kind of gifts from that deity for serving them so well. And again, you could get those from multiple deities. Now, one thing I want to really do is part of building this aspect of my world is I really need to come up with more domains. There aren't nearly enough domains in 5th edition, and a lot of the ones don't really match the god that they're assigned to very well, just because there aren't enough domains. There's not enough variety. So if you look in like the back of the player's handbook at the various pantheons and the gods, you know, some of the domains, it's just really a reach that A, that the god would even have that domain, or B, that that's the only domain they would have. Like, it's like this domain does not really fit this god as well as some other domain that doesn't exist would. So I think this is the one spot so far that I've found in 5th edition that I think Wizards just really dropped the ball here. And I don't know if it was just a resources and time thing and they just weren't able to do more domains, or if it was kind of a balance thing. They didn't want to have a cleric have way more possibilities than other classes as far as different archetypes. But just looking at it from a setting point of view, there are not nearly enough domains to describe even the gods they've given us, much rather if you want to come up with your own. Now, I'm not saying that I want as many domains as we had in like 3rd edition and Pathfinder, because it got ridiculous and you had these really super specialized domains. But I do think there's a middle ground between the two that's where we need to be. So I'm going to have to come up with my own domains to really fit my gods. And, you know, this is another great way to really customize your setting. You know, I think coming up with new backgrounds and coming up with new domains, things like that, are great ways to really tailor 5th edition to your setting that you're creating. Other possibilities are coming up with new archetypes for some of the classes. I don't think I'd want to go so far as coming up with a whole new class, but for instance, in the most recent Unearthed Arcana on the Wizards website, they came up with a swashbuckler rogue archetype for like a more seafaring campaign. And so something like that is a really cool way to come up with some character options that are more specific to your campaign and its flavor. So I may do some stuff like that too. At this point, I'd like to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
We all have busy lives, and the hustle and bustle of modern day living can often leave us feeling anxious and stressed. Do you find yourself longing for your free time, yet when it arrives, you can't unwind? Do you feel restless and on edge? Are you having trouble sleeping at night? Do you wake up exhausted in the morning and dreading the day ahead of you? Are you not finding satisfaction in your romantic relationships? If you are suffering from any of these symptoms, do not despair. There is hope. Audible Books is a new therapy that can help you escape from the grind of your routine. You can sit back, close your eyes, and enjoy a beautiful fantasy world or explore the stars, all without leaving your most comfortable chair or couch or bed. Ask your doctor if Audible is right for you and take the first step to a richer life today. You can try Audible for 30 days for free, courtesy of Starwalker Studios. Just visit the website for your favorite podcast at starwalkerstudios.com and go to the bottom of the latest episode show notes for details. Audible Books. Enjoy a good book today.
I think the gods should be mysterious and impossible to understand. Even a high-level cleric doesn't know a god's mind. Everybody knows the gods exist. There's no arguing that because their power is very evident in the world, but no one understands them. And this is partly because the gods don't explain themselves to mortals, and it's partly because they're alien and unknowable. The gods' answers change over time, and what they want from people change over time. Also, their appearance is inconsistent, so a god won't always appear the same way to everybody. And their motives seem irrational by our standards. And the other big thing in my world is that the gods make demands of their worshipers. Like, if you are a member of a mystery cult and you are serving a god, that god is going to want things from you. And you're going to have to supply or do those things if you want to stay where you're at in that god's eyes or move higher. And the higher rank or the deeper in the mysteries you go, the more the god's going to want from you. Also, another idea, and I think I got this from the Kobold book as well, is that one god may wear many masks. All right, so I keep talking about this book, so I went and grabbed the book so I can tell you exactly where I'm getting some of this from. So this is the Kobold Guide to Worldbuilding, and you can get this on Amazon, and I will have a referral link in my show notes for you if you'd like to go check it out. And if you buy something on Amazon with that link, of course, you will help us out. And kind of the specific articles that I got some inspiration from in here are Designing a Pantheon by Wolfgang Bauer, and It's a Mystery, How to Design a Mystery Cult by David Zeb Cook. Also, another great essay in here is called The Limits of Design, Kitchen Sink Design by Wolfgang Bauer. And he makes some great points about kitchen sink settings. And that's the article I talked about that I wish I would have read that before I did my kitchen sink settings episode. There's also a great article, Here Would Be Dragons on Map Making by Jonathan Roberts. So those are kind of the cream of the crop in this book. It's a pretty good book. Like I said, it's about 50-50. About half the articles are really cool, and about half of them are just kind of whatever. So yeah, you can check that out. Now, unfortunately, it's been a long time since I read those articles, so I can't really remember which of these ideas came from which articles and which of them came from somewhere else or what. So, but you can check that out if you're curious and you want some more resources for this. All right, so this idea, I do think, came from one of those articles, and that is that one god may wear many masks. So humans, elves, and dwarves may be worshiping three separate deities that are actually the same deity. She just appears differently to each of them. And this is another way to kind of trim down the number of gods in my setting. So, for instance, my deity of love is Hanalei Selenil, I believe is her name, which is an elven deity. However, the dwarves have a deity of love, and I'm blanking on her name right now. And also the humans, of course, have Aphrodite. And these three deities are actually all the same deity. So when Hanali appears to the dwarves, she appears as a dwarf, and she is known by the dwarf deity's name. When she appears to the humans as Aphrodite, she appears as a human. And not only are their appearances different, but the different, as the article calls them, mass of these gods, or as I like to call them, their aspects, their different aspects, could also be different as far as their personalities, what they expect from their worshipers, even their alignment. So the elf version may be chaotic good, the dwarf version may be lawful good, and the human version may be chaotic neutral. But they're all the same deity. They're just different aspects. So conflict can and does occur between people who worship different aspects of the same god. Now, the mortals, the players, characters, and NPCs in the world don't know that the gods have different aspects. So the whole, like, I just gave a massive spoiler to my world, the whole thing that the three gods of love are actually the same, nobody knows that. They all think they're different gods. And so the dwarven followers of the goddess of love and the human followers of the goddess of love may actually kill each other because they think their god is better, and in reality, it's all the same god. So the campaign is going to begin with the death of one of the good or neutral gods. So this was a god who actually kind of kept the other gods on task, the other good and neutral gods, as much as they were on task. So once he's out of the picture, the good and neutral gods become even more complacent and things start getting worse. And that's another thing with storytelling, is you want to start your story at a point where things are changing. And so this is one of the many changes that are going to be happening in the world as the campaign starts. Also, this god's death foreshadows the upheaval to come, and his portfolio's aspects in the world begin to unravel, and crazy things start to happen because of that. So one possibility I'm considering is that this god is killed by a mortal who is working with some of the evil gods. The mortal then ascends to godhood and ultimately double-crosses the evil gods who aided him in killing the good god in the very beginning. And this can foreshadow the possibility of the PCs one day becoming deities themselves. One idea I'm kicking around is having the PCs have the option to become gods themselves at the end of the campaign, past 20th level, of course. And, you know, the question is, will they be better gods and do their jobs, or will they be just as bad as the current gods, or maybe even worse? Now, the gods that are the most alike are the ones that are most likely to fight one another, especially if they share portfolio elements. And over time during the campaign, the pantheon will consolidate and get smaller as these gods fight it out. However, sometimes new gods will arise as well, but when they do, they must somehow claim a portfolio. So you can't just become a god and like make up a new portfolio or just have a portfolio that someone else has. You know, you have to take a portfolio from another god. And you might wonder, well, how do you already have like two gods of the sea? And the way that happened is those are gods that came from elsewhere. So, for instance, Poseidon, the human god of the sea, is a god who came from elsewhere into the world, and there was already a god of the sea. So, you know, he didn't just become a god in the world and say, I'm going to be a god of the sea. He was already a god of the sea from another world that came to this world. Another thing I'm playing with is having demigods, you know, half god, half human, like Hercules or Achilles in the world. I think that would be fun. They're not going to be player characters because that would be overpowered, but they could be NPCs that the PCs could interact with. So yeah, that's where I'm at. And next, I'm going to start talking about how the different pantheons of the different races of the gods in my world work and how that all came to be. And I think some of this will make more sense because right now you might kind of be wondering, well, what about this and what about that? But a lot of it has to do with how I see the races coming onto my world that, you know, I've thought about where they all came from, and they didn't all just pop into existence at the same time. A lot of them came from older worlds or from other planes. So in a nutshell, there were dragons, and you know, when the dragons came, there were like maybe two gods. There's, I think it's Bahamut, the good dragon god, and there was Tiamat, the evil dragon god, and that was kind of it. And then the giants came and they had their gods, but most of those gods are now gone. And so when the elves came with their gods, they brought a whole family of gods. And so those gods kind of laid claim to the portfolios that they controlled. And so the next race to come on the scene, the dwarven gods came from elsewhere, and then they either brought dwarves with them or they created new dwarves. I think they created them there because I wanted the dwarves to really have a tie to the world that the elves don't have. So when the dwarven gods came, they couldn't just take a portfolio that was already claimed by an elven god. So they had to kind of fill in the gaps, and then there might have been some conflict between dwarven and elven gods. So for instance, the dwarven god of love, you know, she may have actually come to the world and the elven gods took her out and Hanalei absorbed her aspect, or that god just never came, but the dwarves were worshiping a god of love who didn't exist here, and so Hanalei kind of stepped into that role for them. And then when the humans came, there were even fewer openings in the pantheons because the elven gods and the dwarven gods were taking them all up. So when you look at the, you know, you look at the elven gods and they're all what they are. You look at the dwarven gods and some of those are actually aspects of elven gods, but most of the dwarven gods are actual dwarven gods. They're their own entities. There are just fewer of them, like the entire dwarven pantheon from Forgotten Realms or wherever isn't there. But then when you get to the human gods, quite a few of the human gods are aspects of either elven and dwarven gods. And then there are a few that are actually their own entities. And then there are some that are their own entities and are in conflict with older gods like the sea gods. And they're going to duke it out. And it's kind of interesting how I'm doing it. I really dig it because there's a lot of nuance there. And again, the players aren't going to know any of this, and the people in the world aren't going to know any of this, but it's things that can be happening behind the scenes and informing things that happen. And there are mysteries that maybe they could dig into and start to figure out if they really wanted to. But it's interesting how, you know, some of the human gods are like the humans know it's an elven god. Like, for instance, my goddess of magic is Seheni Mumbo. And when the humans worship their god of magic, they worship Seheni Mumbo and they see her as her elven aspect. They acknowledge that their god of magic is the elven god of magic. And that has to do with how magic works in my world and how, you know, the humans basically learned it from the elves. So it makes sense that they worship that goddess. But for instance, their goddess of love, Aphrodite, they see as a human goddess and they don't know or understand or would accept that she's actually an elven goddess in disguise, so to speak. I think another god that they worship, Moradin, the dwarven god of the forge and creation and things like that, humans worship Moradin as Moradin. Like they see him as Moradin and they know that he's a dwarven god. So it's kind of interesting. They have some gods that, you know, this god is a dwarven god and we know it and we worship him anyway. This god is an elven god. We know it. We worship him anyway. And then there's ones that are dwarven or elven gods in disguise and they don't know that. And then there are a few that are literally human gods that are new gods. And I'm having a lot of fun with the human gods and making them very much like the Greek gods were in like the Homer epics, where they're very kind of childish. And that's because they're new gods. They're a lot younger than the elven and dwarven deities. And they are humans who ascended to godhood, which again is why they're probably going to be a little bit different than their namesakes in my world. Because, you know, I mean, Zeus in Greek mythology was born to Titans and slew the Titans. And in my world, Zeus is probably going to be some human guy that became a god. So that's going to change him as a god. And once I make all those changes, if he's a totally different character now, then I won't call him Zeus. But if he's still basically Zeus, I may still call him Zeus. So we'll see. And one last thing, a bit of feedback I'd like to request is let me know if you want me to go into more detail on my actual pantheons and actually go through the deities and who they are and like specifics about that, because I'm kind of thinking that's getting a little too specific for people and people don't really care. But if you're really curious, you know, which gods I'm using and which ones are aspects of which gods and stuff like that, like I'd be more than happy to go through that. I just don't know if people would be interested in that. So let me know. Well, that is going to wrap up episode 31 of Game Master's Journey. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you would like to reach me, please email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. Please follow me on Google Plus. Just search for Lex Starwalker, and please follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please visit the website starwalkerstudios.com, and there you can find a link to our Google Plus community page within the show notes for this episode. If you enjoy Game Master's Journey and you'd like to see the show continue, then I'd really appreciate any support that you could give to the studio. A great way that you can help us out is to try a free trial of Audible Books. A book I really recommend is The Name of the Wind by Pat Rothfuss. Other ways that you can help out with supporting the show is you can become a patron. You can also do a one-time donation via the nice pink donate button on our website. And you can also use our Amazon referral links when you're shopping on Amazon. And finally, you could leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Just click on the iTunes or Stitcher button at the top of the show notes. And you can find links and more information about all these great ways that you can help out the show in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney. So once again, I want to thank you for downloading and listening to this episode. I'm having a lot of fun with season 2 of the show. Until next week, game on!
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.